TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Winona LaDuke on Standing Rock, The Test of Civil Society. On her way home from one of many visits to Standing Rock, the Native American activist and author, Winona LaDuke, stopped in Chicago and gave a talk at the Newberry Library. She spoke to a standing room only audience. Winona LaDuke lives on the White Earth Reservation in northern Minnesota. She's working on issues of sustainable development, renewable energy, and food systems. She's the founder of the White Earth Land Recovery Project. That's one of the largest reservation-based nonprofits in the country. As program director of Honor the Earth, she works nationally and internationally with indigenous communities on climate change, renewable energy, and environmental justice. From her parents, Betty Bernstein and Vincent Sanbert LaDuke, Winona received an early introduction into the two different worlds where Native American and colonial settler issues are being defined. After graduating from Harvard, she moved to her father's ancestral land on White Earth in 1982. Winona LaDuke's talk in Chicago was almost an hour long and based on a slideshow. Framed by her clear-headed assessment of the extraordinary risk that the fracking oil boom and the network of pipelines pose to our survival, she offered examples how to break free from our addiction to fossil fuels. All her comments on the beautiful wild rice lakes of White Earth, that, by the way, were just saved from being invaded by the Sandpiper pipeline, to solar and wind energy, local jobs, organic food, native hemp production, and the Buffalo Commons. All these references had to be cut back because they rely so much on the images in her slideshow. However, her understanding of the urgency of the moment and the way so many of us are connecting to the outcome at Standing Rock have all become defining issues of our time. Winona LaDuke says, "This is a test of civil society. To me, it is the question where we're all going and how it's going to work out." Here's Winona LaDuke on Standing Rock.
Thank you all so much for coming out tonight. Ani nindawe maganaduk nikagoyget magas bine sequel go makwandodeum gababani kahagish kanigining and dunjibamigwich. Thank you again for the honor of being here tonight. Thank you all for being here. I really appreciate this opportunity. I'm a little rough. I just came in from Standing Rock. I want to say a little bit about where I come from and then where I come from just now. So my reservation is in northwestern Minnesota, Anishinaabe, one of seven Anishinaabe reservations in the north. It's kind of between Bemidji and Fargo. Do y'all know where that, y'all know where Minnesota is? Very good. Okay, we're doing good. I was just checking, you know, and then I did just come from Standing Rock. And, you know, so I want to talk tonight about the idea of making America great again. I have some ideas on that. I thought I'd lay them out. I just think we ought to do it, you know? So I was going to do that, but I want to say that yesterday I was, so these are some pictures from Standing Rock. This is from about a week and a half ago. That's your tax dollars at work if you're a North Dakota citizen, or maybe one of the 12 states, I think, that actually sent cops. I'm not sure which cops those are, spraying those people that are in the water. Kind of rough up there right now. I wasn't part of this one. And that's the use of the MRAP, which I just saw the first time in MRAP. It's called a mine-resistant armored personnel carrier. So mine-resistant. I have always thought that there might be a lot of landmines in North Dakota. So one should always have a mine-resistant armored personnel carrier at hand at all times. That's what they got out there. I just want to say that I did have a visit with one of our attorneys, our various attorneys, of which there are many, since there are about 450 people who have been arrested. Y'all following this, right? The reason that, you know, it's very important that we all talk about it, because it's this test of civil society. You know, to me, it's this question of where we're all going and how it's going to work out. And I really want to, you know, be grateful to those who are so courageous. I took a bunch of those young protectors to dinner last night. It was like their favorite auntie for a meal. And, you know, I was asking him, like, you know, one guy, Natani Means, Russell's son, he had been beaten up pretty bad by Hennepin County. He's a big, tough guy, though, you know, but he's like, yeah, man, they really laid into me. And then I was talking to this other guy, and I heard about his, so this is what court is like. I think there was 45 people that made their appearances here. You know, so Morton County, very conservative. You've gathered that, right? Very, very conservative. I'm thinking a little out of touch with the rest of the world. But anyway, Morton County court. This is what was heard in court. There's like 45 people in there, and one of these guys, Lakota guy, goes in there, and he only speaks in Lakota. That's how it starts. He just talks in Lakota. He introduces himself in Lakota, and he talks. And then he says, the judge says, you know, starts talking to him, and he says, you know, he says something back in Lakota. And finally, the judge says to him, you know, that English is the language of this court. And he said, Lakota is the language of this territory, though. I thought that was a very interesting moment in political history, right? And then followed by this Blackfeet guy who I know a little bit better, and his companion told me what he said, and then his lawyer told me the same thing. So this Blackfeet guy goes up, and he's in front of the judge, and the judge says, and he's only speaking Blackfeet, and the judge says, how do you plead to the charge of trespassing? He says, not guilty, it's stolen land. And then he says, the judge says, how do you plead to the charge of rioting? And he says, I cannot be rioting because I was praying. Very interesting moment in civil society. And so those who have not been up there, I'm asking you to consider coming. We could use a lot of people to come, even to Mandan for the court, the hearings. You know, I live in northern Minnesota. And for many years, I have been working, you know, on a lot of issues up there in my area. But, you know, I went last year in January, and, you know, I go out there all the time. I don't want you to think I don't go to North Dakota. I go there all the time. But, you know, I went out there, and I was at some meetings on, it wasn't on pipelines. It was on radiation standards. They had issued these, they increased the recommended daily allowances of radiation in North Dakota by a factor of 50 in order to accommodate fracking waste in municipal landfills. Really interesting health question there. You know, and what I want to say is that people for the past 30 years have been flying over North Dakota. And they had a depopulation for 50 years, kept losing people. And so we all kind of just watched it. And in the meantime, bad stuff started happening in North Dakota. So you have basically, you know, we could call it a petro state. You know, a lot of oil influence there. We call it the Deep North. Up there, it's the Mississippi of the North. You know, anybody who puts dogs on Indians and puts, you know, former tribal chair and president of the tribal college, Sitting Bull Tribal College, Ron, his horse is Thunder. He and his wife, they were standing there, and they were arrested, and they were charged with rioting, and they were put in dog kennels for 9 hours. Anybody who puts people in dog kennels for 9 hours? You know, these are issues that Amnesty International is looking at. But what I'm saying is that we got to quit flying over North Dakota and saying, I hope that works out okay for y'all, because now we're coming out. And it's this moment in time which I think we're watching. So I just, you know, had to do a little preface. I'll talk a little bit about more about that later. But, you know, as I reflected on what I was going to say, a lot of you are, you know, obviously, you know, super thoughtful people, or you're here and you're not out eating junk food someplace, so that's a good sign. But, you know, I'm going to suggest that, you know, the Eurocentric worldview is not actually probably a good plan over the long haul. We might want to rethink some of that, and perhaps the answer to some of the problems is not within the same paradigm which has brought them forth. And that it is also possible that other people's knowledge will be very important as we figure out how we're going to go ahead. You know, so I just want to say that, because I think that we learn a lot of things from a lot of people. I'm someone who learns from anybody, you know, and we should be open-minded. So what I'm trying to say is that it's possible that there is an entire worldview that has nothing to do with empire, and you'll be okay. Just let it go. Just let it go, okay? So that's what this is about. As we think about making America great again, I just want to point this out. You know, a couple of history lessons, but we won't be giving, I don't think we're getting invited to the White House anytime soon for history class. But what I want to say is that if I want to say make America great again, I'm going to say let's go way back. Let's go OG. You know what I mean? I'm saying, like, this is what I mean. You got, you got huge agrobiodiversity in the northern plains. This area here is, you know, actually the Missouri River, where we're all fighting over the fracking. That's the epicenter of northern agriculture, Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara people. You know, tremendous agrobiodiversity in that territory. So, you know, if I think about going back old school, I'd be thinking about something like, you know, the time when there was 50 million buffalo and the sound of a herd would resonate and would change the whole ecology of a system because of the power of those beasts, single largest migratory herd in the world. You know, that's great. That's great. You know, what's great is thinking about billions of passenger pigeons no longer here, but a sky would darken for a day, perhaps, as they flew over in the central flyway. That's great. That's great. Fish throughout our area and water that you could still drink, you know. And what I want to say is where I come from, you could still drink the water from a lake. Northern Minnesota, you could still drink the water from a lake. And to me, that's worth everything, you know. So when I think about being great, I think about that, going back a little ways, you know. And that's what we did, you know. But we still got a lot of it. This is our wild rice. I did bring some wild rice because I always get, you know, asked, did you ever bring rice? So we happen to sell pipeline-free wild rice. I just want to let you know. I spent 4 years fighting a corporation called Enbridge with a pipeline proposal they want to throw through our best wild rice beds. 4 years. 4 years. Went to every regulatory hearing. Intervened in every process. Showed up, you know, everywhere. And then in August of this year, after 4 years, the Enbridge company announced that they had canceled the Sandpiper line. But then Enbridge went and bought a third of DAPL, Dakota Access Pipeline, or I refer to it as the Dakota Excess Pipeline. You know, and they bought a third of that. And I had a little conversation with Enbridge today. And I said, you know, what Al needs to do is Enbridge needs to say that they're going to withdraw from Dakota Access because they don't like how Energy Transfer is acting, that they don't believe that people should be have dogs put on them and should be locked up, that they believe there should be a full environmental impact statement. That's what they should do. And that, you know, if there's going to be a pipeline discussion, they should consider another route, which would be just north of Bismarck, which was the original route. But they threw that out so they could put it right by the Indians and not affect the white people, you know. That's what I said to Enbridge. We'll see what they come out with. Okay, so this is our problem. You know, I'm an economist by training, so I spend a lot of time looking at dumb stuff. That's what I feel like, you know. Like what I'm trying to figure out is why would you squander all your natural capital in 50 years and then act like it's going to work out for you? I know y'all follow me on this. Like, that's a really bad idea. That's a really bad idea. You know, to diminish the wealth of the creator in the natural world and think that that's going to work out for you. Like, what planet are you from? You know? So I'm just going to talk about a little bit where we're at, the movement that's there, and, you know, where I'm thinking about it. So just briefly, you know, a few things, but this is where we're at pretty much. I'm 57. You know, you guys, in my 50 years of life, I've had a pretty good time. I've consumed half the world's known fossil fuel resources. Y'all did it with me. Did you have a pretty good time? I mean, just admit it. It's been a blast, right? We got, like, you know, we got, like, flowers from, you know, Colombia the same day. Sometimes I actually have purchased that Fiji water just because I figure that's got to have the highest carbon footprint in the world. You know what I mean? You understand what I'm saying? It's like, we're, like, this crazy, the stuff that we're flying around, right? We got the, you know, food thing. We've been driving around in these massive automobiles. We've created the society that's like super inefficient, super high consumption. 50 years. That's a lot of fossil fuels, right? So then when you get to that point where you've consumed 50 years and, you know, you've consumed everything that's easy to get and you live in a society that is like super hooked on it, basically, you end up in a situation where you end up like an addict. You know, and that's pretty much what we are. And I don't know, I have more than one addict in my family. I don't know if anybody has any addicts. My own personal addiction is caffeine. That's my one and only, I just want to say. But, you know, I don't know if any of you have addicts, and addicts are kind of a drag. Do you ever notice that? Like, they do stuff. They, like, do bad stuff. They, like, you know, rationalize, right? They didn't do it. They didn't do it, you know. They lie. Sometimes they steal. They're jerks. They don't get their addiction. And basically, I feel like that's what we've become as a society, you know. I feel like we have an economy that is predicated on an addiction to fossil fuels. And it's not necessary to have an economy that's predicated on an addiction to fossil fuels, but that's what we got. And in that process, when you can't get your fix, you start doing bad stuff, invading countries, you know, and then engaging in what one would call extreme extraction, which is where we're at now. It's extreme behavior. That's what addicts do. So extreme extraction is, you know, blowing off the top of 500 mountains in Appalachia, right? And not even using that coal here anymore. We're closing down coal plants. We're like shipping that stuff over to India, right? That's like crazy stuff, right? Drilling 20,000 feet under the ocean and hoping that that's going to work out, right? My personal feeling is that 20,000 feet under the ocean is where mermaids live. And that's who should be down there. You know what I'm saying? It's like the deep, the dark. We shouldn't be down there. That's not our business, right? It's like, you know, and you know it doesn't work out. That's why we got the Deepwater Horizon, right? It didn't work out. Right, and then you do crazy stuff like this here. That's fracking. That's Texas from the air. That don't look like it's working out too well. The thing about fracking, aside from being extreme, and you put 602 chemicals down and then blow up the bedrock of Mother Earth, is that the average, you know, it's the bottom of the barrel when you're fracking, right? It's the bottom of the barrel. And so an average fracking well is about 4 years. And so they have to keep opening up new wells, which is why it's so capital intensive, so expensive, right? You know? And that's why it's super, you know, crazy and aggressive, too. This is how far it could go. And then the other thing that you do is the tar sands. So this is what we're looking at. You know, we got a lot of infrastructure for oil companies and new infrastructure coming in for oil companies. And this is what happens with your climate change. So you got bad behavior. You got fossil fuels slathered over everything, pretty much. You know, my personal feeling is that if it says side on it, you shouldn't put it on food. You know, fungicide, herbicide, pesticide, you know, side, last bit, that same thing as homicide, genocide, and suicide, right? I just don't feel like you should put it on food. This is what's happening, you know, unless you've been watching too much Fox News, this is what's going on in the world. Oh, yeah, here it is. The Dakota Access Pipeline thing. But you see, I don't know if y'all understand this, but this is a Bakken well. What I'm trying to point out is that you have high production until year five and then it crashes. You see that? That's what I'm saying. And the reason that this is kind of important in the present national debate that we have on the Dakota Access Pipeline is that right now there's 900,000 barrels a day of oil coming out of North Dakota, the Bakken. 900,000 barrels a day, right? It's like 923,000. But, it's busted. It's busted in the Bakken. There's abandoned man camps. You know, used to be full of drilling rigs, couldn't drive anywhere. Super crazy. Not there. The bomb trains are all split up with other trains. You know what I'm saying? It's not usually full-on bomb trains anymore. I know you guys still get some full-on bomb trains here. But see, this is all like excessive crazy. Like, why do you want to move all that crazy stuff around? You know, that's what my grandfather would say. Why do you want to do that? You know, so there's 900,000 barrels a day right now in the Bakken. And according to Lynn Helms, he's the North Dakota czar of energy. Lynn Helms and North Dakota reports that in 2019, there will be 900,000 barrels a day of oil coming out. So what I'm trying to say is that the 900,000 barrels a day that is coming out of the Bakken is already coming out of the Bakken. It's either in a pipeline or in a train. And pipelines don't replace trains because trains go to different destinations than pipelines. Right? They all got it somehow worked out, their customers and their, you know. So to say that if you put in new pipelines, you aren't going to have bomb trains is not true. It's not true at all. It's kind of the Kool-Aid that the oil industry and the politicians want you to drink. So the point is that if there's 900,000 barrels a day that's already going out, and there's 900,000 barrels a day supposed to go out in 2019, what are you going to do with a 570,000 barrel a day pipeline? That's how much that Dakota, that's why I call the Dakota excess pipeline. There's not oil to fill that pipeline coming out of North Dakota. Frankly, the only place you could probably fill that pipeline out of is out of the tar sands. So what they just got to do is hook up to Tioga and bring it down. So it's kind of like Keystone Light. That's what you're looking at. And I just want to point out that we did defeat that pipeline, Keystone. And I don't know if y'all noticed this, but they also defeated a big pipeline in Canada this summer. It's called the Northern Gateway pipeline of in July, the Canadian Appeals Court ruled that the permits were all pulled from the Enbridge Company. Pipeline permits all pulled because they did not consult with Native people. You know, my feeling is that this is not 1890, this is not 1920, this is 2016. There are a lot of Native and Indigenous people in the room, and I feel like this is North America. We are not third-class citizens, we are first-class citizens. You gotta talk to us. You gotta talk to us. So what I want to say is that, you know, we're facing this social, political crisis of, you know, and an economic crisis. You know, like I said, I'm an economist by training. I did a briefing for the Scandinavian banks yesterday after I walked out of a hearing in Standing Rock. I know you guys are going to go home and you're going to say, man, that woman knows a lot about pipelines. This is not my goal in life. Really. I just kind of want to grow cool corn, ride my horses, write some books, you know what I mean? That's like my plan. But I end up in this pipeline thing. It's like I could win a couple pipeline trivia contests right now. But, you know, come out of that hearing and I was talking to these banks in Scandinavia and I said, you know, this is what you call a waste of money. It's called a stranded asset. You're going to put a whole bunch of money into something and about 5-8 years won't be worth nothing. Waste of money. Waste of money. Like buying a big piece of junk. Shouldn't do it. That's where we're at. In our prophecies as Anishinaabe people, they talk about the time of the seventh fire. So they call it the time of the seventh fire. And in that time, they say that we as Anishinaabe people, our prophets told us this a long time ago, we'd have a choice between two paths, they said. And they said one path would be well-worn, but it'd be scorched. They said the other path would not be well-worn, and it would be green. And it would be our choice upon which path to embark, which Mikana, that's a prophecy they had a long time ago for our people. Well, I'm pretty sure that's where we're all at. We're all at that. Cannot combust ourselves further to oblivion. Cannot make it so that there's no water to drink. You know, cannot poison everything. Got to make a choice. So, you know, as I look at what they are proposing at the Dakota Access Pipeline, the $3.9 billion pipeline that they are spending all that money on, you know, is in the face of a lack of infrastructure, you know, on the Standing Rock Reservation. The road that is blocked, 1806, doesn't even have a shoulder on it. You lose people every year on that road. You know, should have a shoulder on a road in first world country that's that heavily traveled. Their hospital was built in the 1960s. They have 4 doctors for 8,000 people. Last 2 years ago, a woman named Debbie Dogskin froze to death in her house. Couldn't afford to pay her heating bills. 100 miles from the Bakken. You know what I'm saying? That's America. That's what we're dealing with. That's what we're dealing with. So, you know, we did a little math. Honor the Earth, our organization, I call them our math program. They like doing all the numbers. They're so funny. So for $3.9 billion, instead of buying a pipeline from nowhere, that they're talking about energy self-sufficiency, with $3.9 billion, you could put 5 kilowatts each of solar on 64,629 homes. Not bad, huh? Plus, you could build 323 2-megawatt wind turbines. Not bad, huh? Then I got this 161 retrofits. I think it's 116,100 retrofits, $8,000 each, you know, to make your house a little bit more efficient, right? And so to me, that's this where we going, where we're at. You know, and in a lot of ways, Standing Rock's story is really America's story because we're a country with a D in infrastructure. And Standing Rock probably has a D minus, F plus, I don't know. you know, you can make some big changes. You know, people say that can't make renewable energy work because we can't meet present demand. I always say, why would you want to? 57% of the power is wasted between point of origin and point of consumption. I want a graceful exit out of the fossil fuel era. I had a blast, but I want a graceful exit. That's what we all want, frankly. And what that looks like is, you know, the combustion engine in the car that brought me here is 16% efficient. Did y'all know that? 16%. So every 6 gallons of gas you put in, only 1 gallon actually moves your vehicle. An electric engine, like in a Tesla, is 65% efficient. That's the future. You know, what we need to do is to be the people that make those changes. We need to be the people that, you know, are going to be about that future. You know, we got tribal hearings this next week with the federal government on consultation. And I issue a poster and it says, you know, what a great guy. He was also from what's known as North Dakota. His name was Sitting Bull. You know, and what he said is, let us put our minds together to see what kind of future we can make for our children. That's what this time is now. You know, it's time to make that future. Hey, thank you very much for your time, Miigwech.
That was Wynonna LaDuke, recorded in Chicago on November 10, 2016, at the Newberry Library. She had just returned from one of several visits to Standing Rock. Thanks to Dale Lehman for the recording. Wynonna LaDuke lives on the White Earth Reservation in northern Minnesota. She's working on climate change, renewable energy, and environmental justice. She's the founder of the White Earth Land Recovery Project and program director of Honor the Earth. She's also the author of 5 books, including Recovering the Sacred, All Our Relations, and a novel, Last Standing Woman. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look for the newest programs page. TUC Radio is free and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation keeps this program on the air. Go to TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. Time of useful consciousness is an aeronautical term. It's the time between the beginning of oxygen deficiency and the loss of consciousness. Time for useful projects to rescue the planet and the plane. My name is Maria Gladden. Thank you for listening.